presenting Hop Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves.
CX-4 calling control tower. CX-4 calling control tower. Standing by.
Control tower back to CX-4. Wind southeast. Ceiling 1200. All clear.
Okay, this is Hop Harrigan coming in. Yes, it's America's ace of the airways. Coming in for another transcribed episode in the adventures of Hop Harrigan.
Say, gang, with aviation jumping ahead so fast and becoming more and more a part of our everyday lives, a place like Alaska takes on added significance. America's northernmost territory isn't very far from the top of the earth, you know, and its strategic location makes it important in this country's future aviation plans. From the standpoint of commercial aviation, Alaska may be a stop on future air trips from this country to many parts of Asia and the Far East. Now, if you take a look at an air age map centered at the North Pole, you'll see how much shorter a flight via Alaska would be than one by way of Europe and the Mediterranean region. And looking at Alaska through the eyes of the Air Force, we see other reasons for its importance. Air Force leaders are well aware of the potentialities of Alaska, and also of the potential troubles polar weather can make for flyers. From reports of the units that operated up north during the war, the Air Force realized they would have to find out more about polar flying. Air units defending Alaska in the war years had to limit their operations to suit the weather. In an attempt to overcome this, the Air Force sent the 46th Reconnaissance Squadron to the Alaskan Theater a year and a half ago as a pioneer combat-type unit. The squadron had many jobs to perform: photomapping Alaska, searching for oil, testing new equipment, obtaining information needed to establish regular air transport service, and others. In just a few minutes, fellas and girls, I'll be back with the exciting story of those operations up in Alaska. So don't forget to listen. And now to our story. The sudden weird change in the tone of the bells from the carillon of Peronitz has finally been explained. Each of the discordant bells has been drilled and the damage hidden by a metal plug. But Hop and Tank are still in the dark as to the reason for the acts of vandalism. With John Temple, the FBI agent, they flew to Bay City in Nebraska to see the one remaining bell of the carillon in perfect condition. Landing late at night, they took a taxi to the city hall where they were to meet one of Temple's agents. Just as they arrived, the city hall bell tolled the hour of midnight, and the boys' consternation was discordant. With Temple leading the way, they rushed inside the building, and at the base of the winding stairway leading up to the belfry, found Temple's agent sprawled on the floor, dead. Now, a short while later, we find Hop and Tank waiting in one of the empty offices.
We've been waiting nearly a half hour. What's John doing anyhow?
Oh, cleaning up the details, I suppose.
Gosh, he sure took it hard. Didn't say much, but the way his face got white all of a sudden, the way he looked at the poor guy.
It was John's friend.
I thought the whole thing was a joke, but when somebody gets killed...
Wait, here comes John.
Well, nothing more we can do here, boys. Might as well get back to the airport.
Anything you say? Think we're going to check the bell?
I already have. The usual hole up near the tongue.
No metal plug?
No. Apparently, they didn't have time to put it in.
I see. I'm sorry, John.
Yeah, me too.
Thanks. Let's get out of here.
Sure. Come on, Tank.
We're going to fly right back to Lakeville?
That's up to John.
Well, how about it, John? Do we...
Not now, Tank.
Oh.
He never had a chance. His gun was still in its holster. He got it in the back.
Dirty rats.
He was standing by the stairs. He must have heard something up in the steeple. Then, for some reason, he turned around. That's when they shot him.
You've used the word they. Are you sure more than one person's involved?
There has to be. Climbing up into the various steeples and drilling holes in the bells is too much work for one man alone.
After you, John.
The police left a card out, I suppose.
Oh, that must be it.
John?
Yeah?
You want to go back to Lakeville?
Oh, I don't know. Might as well, I suppose.
Filing.
Yeah. Airport officer.
Seated on either side of John Temple, Hop and Tank maintain a respectful silence as the FBI agent stares grimly ahead with unseeing eyes. Only once during the ride does he speak.
We've got to get them, Hop. We've got to get them.
At the airport, Tank busies himself immediately with checking and refueling the plane, while Temple accompanies Hop to the administration building, where the young pilot signs out on the field register. Suddenly, as he starts to return the fountain pen to the airport manager, his eyes catch sight of a name on the page, and the pen drops from his fingers.
John.
Yes, Hop?
Look at this.
Is there anything wrong, sir?
No, nothing. John, recognize that name?
Carlos Mendes. Why...
Same name we saw on the airport register back at Flemington. See? Flying a Balanca.
Great Scott. Time of arrival, 9:30 p.m. Departure, 11:30 p.m.
Yes, he took off a few minutes before you landed.
Did you see Mendes?
I checked him in myself. He was having engine trouble, had to go into Bay City for a special welding job. We didn't have the facilities.
Seems to develop engine trouble very easily.
Hey, Hop, I wonder...
You said whoever's behind this has to use a plane?
Yes, and this is too much of a coincidence. Where's the nearest telegraph office?
Back in the city. Oh, but you can phone your wire in. Use that telephone there.
Right, thanks.
What are you going to do, John?
Have headquarters check every airport near the cities and towns where the bells have been damaged. If we get another report on that Balanca, we'll have our man.
Sensing a possible break in the mystery, John Temple dashes over to the phone, where Hop joins him after rereading the all-important line in the register. A few minutes later, they're back in the plane and airborne. Tank, noticing their excitement, presses them for information.
Come on, you guys, spill it, will you? I know something's cooking.
We have a lead, Tank. A good one, I think.
A plane landed and took off from Bay City, Nebraska. The same plane which was in Flemington, Ohio, this morning.
How do you know?
Saw it on the airport register.
On both registers, Tank. A Balanca. Flown by one Carlos Mendes.
And he had the same story at both places. Engine trouble.
Hey!
I sent a telegram to headquarters, asking them to check the airports near the other towns where the bells have gone sour.
That ought to be the tip-off.
It will be.
Hey, I just happened to think. The guy must have landed on our field, too.
Why, that's right.
Gail didn't mention it. No reason why she should, of course.
It's all coming back now, Hop. Remember when we was coming in for a landing? It was snowing.
Yeah.
The plane took off right in front of us. We almost chewed up his tail, as a matter of fact. Yeah, we'd better check with Gail as soon as we land. She'll have all the dope.
When do we get in, Hop?
Not for several hours yet.
Well, open that throttle. Let's get some steam up.
I'll have the reports in the other towns in about an hour. They'll be relayed through a radio range station en route.
Oh, relax, Tank. Relax, he says. Maybe I should take a nap. Might not be a bad idea.
And don't forget, we're not out of the woods yet, Tank.
What do you mean?
We may have our man. May, I said. But we have no proof. And more important, no motive. The vital question now is, why? Why have the bells of Piranhas been sabotaged?
Like a wave of cold water, John Temple's question suddenly douses Tank's enthusiasm. 8 bells, each damaged. What could the reason possibly be? We'll know more in a moment, gang, so stand by. You know, gang, since the first operational mission of the 46th Reconnaissance Squadron out of Ladd Field near Fairbanks, Alaska, the unit has flown more than 5,000 hours and 1,000,000 miles. All that in a year and a half. When the squadron arrived in Alaska, navigators found their maps were marked with large white areas, all labeled unexplored. They were told that conventional methods of navigation could not be used in the polar areas, and they found it out for themselves in the first few missions. Fortunately, during the last year, navigators have worked out a system whereby the planes of the squadron can keep track of their location no matter where they fly. They've learned to estimate wind, drift, and ground speed to such a fine margin that it's easy nowadays to find out just where you are over Alaska to within 1 mile. Discoveries of various weather quirks during the flights interested many of the pilots, who finally concluded that polar weather looked worse than it really was. Because Alaska is so close to the top of the world, many strange things occurred. Summer missions were flown in continuous daylight, even though the average mission was 20 hours. On the other hand, winter flights were in continual darkness. During certain periods in the spring and fall, Alaska is in a constant twilight, half light, half dark. When flying the world's roof, the crews often saw the sun rise and set twice during a 20-hour flight. All these flights and all this experience has resulted in Air Force planes being able to fly anywhere in the polar region during any part of the year. It's a big step forward in opening up the Northern Territory for aviation. All these advances, though, aren't any good without flyers and technicians to run things. Always remember, gang, America needs flyers. And now back to our story. Heading back to Lakeville after the fateful visit to Bay City, Hop, Tank, and John Temple roar through an inky black sky, waiting for a report from Washington. A report they hope will confirm their belief that one Carlos Mendes has caused the damage to the bells of Piranitz. Finally, at 3 a.m, the radio sputters into life.
Hey, what's up?
It may be the report from Washington.
We'll soon find out.
Come in. Come in. Over.
Cornwall Radio from Beechcraft, NCA 2043. Go ahead. Over.
Have message relayed from Washington headquarters of the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
It's a report. Yowie. Hold it tight.
Over.
John Temple aboard. We'll put him on. Stand by. Hey, John. Take it.
Thanks. Hello, this is John Temple, FBI. Over.
Are you ready to receive message? Over.
Yes, go ahead. Over.
Message reads as follows. From Department J, FBI headquarters, Washington, John Temple. Thorough check of all airfields indicates presence of Carlos Mendez and mechanic during time immediately preceding Bell's discordance. Mendez stopped at each of 6 towns you've specified in your request. Submitted evidence fairly conclusive.
I'll say.
That is the end of the message. Over.
All right. Thanks a lot. Here you are, Hop.
Right. Okay, Cornwall. Beechcraft, over and out.
Cornwall, out.
There, what did I tell you? You were trying to give me the soft pedal.
Well, I admit we've made some progress.
Yeah, but where do we go from here?
Well, let's stop and add up for a minute. Mendez and his mechanic have flown all over the United States, stopping at each town where bells and barometers have been installed. Then he and his mechanic went to the bell, drilled a hole in it, and replaced the hole with a plug.
Obviously, the plugs were made in advance, fitting the size of the hole their bit would drill out.
Right. Then after going to all that trouble, chancing a number of obvious risks, they merely took off again.
So, what have we got? Well, Aztec? Oh, guys, we got the killer.
We have a suspect, Tank, no more.
Oh, we know who drilled the holes in the bells.
We think we know, Tank.
Yeah, but guys...
The evidence points to Mendez very strongly, I admit. But where's the proof?
Oh, find Mendez and we'll beat the proof on him. Now, there you have something, pal. Where do we find Mendez?
We've looked for him.
North, south, east, west. Take your pick.
But Belanca can't fly forever. He's got to come down somewhere. John, you put all your boys to work. We'll find him just like that.
Maybe. Then what do we do after we get him?
I told you, pound it out of him.
A citizen of a foreign country, Tank? Oh, no. The State Department would have my eye. Besides, we don't operate that way.
And now all the bells have been used up. He may be heading for the border this minute.
Well, you don't think he came all the way up here from Argentina only to drill holes for you?
You have any better ideas?
Oh, but guys, the way you talk, you make it sound like we're worse off than ever.
Are we really any better off?
Of course we are.
No, Tank, we're not. We have a suspect. We can chase him till kingdom comes. We can question him till we're blue in the face. And he can deny everything and we'll be powerless.
Then what the dickens are we going to do?
Just pray. Pray for a break. Lord knows we need him.
So what seemed to be a road to a quick solution of the mystery has come to a dead end. Without proof, without motive, Hop, Tank, and John Temple are completely powerless, even though they have a suspect. Gang, there's a startling surprise ahead, so be sure to hear our next suspense-packed episode. Tune in and fly with Hop Harrigan, America's ace of the airwaves. So long, Hop! We'll be seeing you same time, same mutual station. Bob Harrigan is a transcribed, copyrighted feature appearing in All American Comics magazine.